We'll talk about this war in Iran. As you know, week number 5, approaching week number 6. We are beginning week number 6 of the war on Friday night. It will be 5 full weeks of war in Iran on Friday. And there is no sign of the war ending. As you know, we are in a stalemate. The price of oil is exploding. And even after Trump's speech tonight, if the goal was to reassure the markets, it had the opposite effect. And I imagine the reason for this is because the market believed the hype. They thought that the speech would announce an imminent end to the fighting, and I imagine they priced that in. They priced in that perhaps the oil market would normalize or begin to normalize starting immediately. And when Trump did not announce that, I think this is why after the speech, oil prices shot right back up in the futures market. And now oil is up to $116 a barrel, I think. So it's steadily climbing. Iran, although they are not launching as many projectiles as before, they are still launching missiles and drones at the Gulf states, at Israel. They're still targeting commercial shipping in the Persian Gulf and the Strait of Hormuz. So everything is basically as it was. Everything is still the way it has been for the past several weeks. The big development from tonight, as you know, is the primetime address by President Trump earlier tonight at, I believe, 9 o'clock Eastern time is when it broadcast. It was about 20 minutes. And I'll just refresh your memory a little bit. Where we have been for the past 48 hours is there has been, it seems, a concerted messaging campaign, I think originating from the White House, trying to convince people that the president is leaning towards ending the conflict immediately. And this would be a shock. This would really be a pivot. Because when Trump announced the conflict initially, he articulated 5 major goals, almost none of which have been achieved. Trump sought to destroy Iran's missiles, destroy Iran's navy, destroy their nuclear complex, pursue regime change. And I think there was one other major objective that I'm forgetting right now. None of these have been achieved, with the exception of sinking Iran's navy. That's about it. We have not suppressed their ability to launch missiles and drones. We have not destroyed their nuclear complex. We have not seized or destroyed their stockpile of highly enriched uranium. Oh, the regional proxies. We've done nothing to the proxies at all. And the Iranian regime remains intact. So we articulated 5 objectives at the beginning. At best, we've achieved exactly 1, which is really the least important, and that is sinking their navy. Of course, as the conflict has gone on, another victory condition has actually emerged, and this is now the central and overriding one. Since the conflict and those 5 objectives were announced 5 weeks ago, Iran has closed the Strait of Hormuz. And in order for the conflict to end, you can tack that on at the end of the list. For us to end the war, we now also need to wrest control of the strait from Iran, either by accomplishing some of those other objectives or getting them to make an agreement through negotiation. So now the objectives are topple the regime, destroy their nuclear complex, destroy their missile production capacity, destroy the regional proxies, and open up the Strait of Hormuz. So we really have not achieved anything. If anything, we're going backwards. So in the past 48 hours, there has been all this messaging saying that Trump is ready to resign from the conflict and the United States is basically going to surrender. Achieving none of these things, not even opening the Strait of Hormuz. And there was a lot of talk that Trump would even be okay with this, that Trump would end the war without even opening up the strait, which you might consider would be the bare minimum. That would get us back to the status quo from before the war. So this has been the talk. This has been the buzz on Monday, on Tuesday. And this led to a lot of speculation all day yesterday that this primetime address earlier tonight would be an announcement to that end. And so all day yesterday, people said Trump was going to announce that we were ending the conflict, we were winding it down, we were phasing out of the war, and we might even leave without opening up the strait. That was the expectation. Now, yesterday, presciently, I said, I don't think that's true at all. My prediction for the speech came true 100%. And if you watched the show last night, I said, it could go either way, but my prediction for the speech is that it's going to be a nothing burger. He is going to hijack the primetime slot. He's going to get all the eyeballs on him. He's going to tout his achievements in the war, and he's not really going to announce anything. That's exactly what happened. And so tonight he went live at 8 o'clock and gave a 20-minute speech, and he talked about the original justification for the war. He leaned into this angle that Iran was pursuing a nuclear weapon and that we had to engage Iran so that eventually we could seize their highly enriched uranium. So you could say that part of the speech was remaking the case for the whole war altogether. In the same way that he laid out the case 5 weeks ago, and he has in other addresses and Truth Social posts since, part of the speech was relitigating the case for why we're even doing this at all. The only news to come out of the speech, which isn't really news at all, is that Trump said the war is going to go on for another 2 to 3 weeks. And as far as any indication of where things are going, that's about all we got. And this is a story about the speech. This is from the Wall Street Journal. It says, quote, President Trump sought to reassure skeptical Americans that the war in Iran is in the national interest, arguing that the operation was necessary to decimate a regime threatening the U.S. and insisting that economic pain would be short-lived. In a 20-minute address from the White House, his most direct sales pitch to the nation since the war began a month ago, Trump said the U.S. had succeeded on the battlefield and declared that U.S. military objectives would be completed very shortly. Trump said he still aims for a diplomatic agreement to end the war, but in the meantime, he vowed to hit Iran extremely hard in the coming weeks and pummel the country back to the Stone Ages where they belong. The Strait of Hormuz, the war's most notable flashpoint, would open up naturally once the war ended, Trump said. He said they're going to want to be able to sell oil, and the gas prices will rapidly come back down. Stock prices will rapidly go back up. He encouraged other countries to build up some delayed courage and wrest control of the strait from Iran. He said, go to the strait and just take it. Protect it. Use it for yourselves. Perceptions of the war are mixed and fall largely along party lines, according to polling. In a recent Fox News survey, 80% of voters said they are concerned about the rising cost of gasoline, which has surged as the war affects global energy prices and threatens to muddle Trump's messaging about the economy going into the midterm elections. So this is a speech, and the only pronounced effect of the speech is that actually oil went right back up. And like I said, I think that the financial markets had been successfully comforted and reassured in the past 2 days. They drank the Kool-Aid like all of you did, I imagine, because that has been, it's very noticeable. It's very conspicuous that the constant drumbeat from the media for the past 72 hours has all been saying, based on insider information, based on anonymous sources, that Trump is leaning towards ending the war. And that has also been telegraphed by elements inside the administration as well. Like I said, State Department, the press office. And so I think the stock market bought it. I think they bought it. I think they really believed that this primetime announcement was going to be that the war is ending post tense. It's going to wind down and we are going to withdraw without achieving our objectives. And on the news that the war is going to continue for at least 2 to 3 weeks, that we're going to bomb them even harder. And Trump says we're going to wrest control of the strait, or other countries are invited to. Investors know that means there's really no plan still, and there's no end in sight. So oil prices went right back up after the speech ended. So what was the purpose of the speech, actually? Well, I think, and I said this at the beginning of the show, and I've been saying this for the past couple of days, You have to understand that all Trump does is lie. It's by design. This is the function of rhetoric from the White House. This is how Trump sees it from a doctrinal point of view. I don't know actually how to say that. But that's the Trump doctrine, which is you flood the zone, you saturate the information space with disinformation or contradictory information, and the purpose of it is to throw your enemies and even your allies off balance. So why do they want the public, writ large, the whole world, why does the administration want the world to believe that they're ready to wrap up the fighting even without opening up the Strait of Hormuz? I think I'm one of the few people that has recognized this. It is because Trump wants other countries to do his dirty work. What is the problem here? As we've talked about, we are stuck. We made an attempt to destroy the Iranian regime and we failed. We took a shot and we missed. And what this has allowed Iran to do is seize the Strait of Hormuz and take a fifth of the world's energy hostage. And we have no ability to take it back. Because the regime survived, it is now actually stronger. So it's not going anywhere. And what's more, Iran prepared for exactly this scenario. They prepared for a decapitation. And that is why not only do they have a very deep bench, which is thoroughly integrated in Iranian society, and that's the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, but it's also a decentralized command. So they actually don't need their command, control, and communications, which have been neutralized by Israel and the United States, because they have delegated out to IRGC lieutenants and commanders their instructions. And that is why throughout this massive country, you have very small, very mobile, very abundant weapon systems that are well hidden, placed everywhere, and they're operated by freelancing members of the IRGC. That is why for the past 5 weeks, drones and missiles are being launched all the time, because they're not necessarily getting communication from the center. They don't need it. So Iran has prepared for exactly this eventuality. They survived the initial strike, which is all they needed to do. The regime is not toppled, and actually now it's fortified because there's a rally around the flag effect, and that goes not just for the public, which supports the regime, which is under attack, but also for the regime itself. There is no factionalism. There doesn't seem to be a lot of cracks. They're sticking together, and they're still able to attack the Persian Gulf, the Gulf Cooperation countries, and Israel. So we're trapped in this situation, as we've discussed, where it seems that the only way out is either a complete surrender, and that involves giving control of the strait to Iran permanently and formally, which is unacceptable, or we have to escalate. But Iran and we and everyone knows that we have no ability to escalate. The only way that we can fight harder is to deploy a ground force of some kind. And the way this is set up is that if that happens, we may win, but we have to give it our all, and a lot of people are going to die. It's actually a question whether the United States could ever prevail against Iran short of using nuclear weapons. Could we even succeed if we did an Iraq-level invasion of Iran? I don't know that we would even win that. Iran has a million soldiers. They have rigged their country for this eventuality. They have a massive population. If Israel can't take Gaza, the United States is not taking Iran under any circumstances. But if we wanted to escalate things, that's the only way we could go. And if we could win, whether that's true or not, it would involve a very high cost in human life. And a lot of Americans would die. And so Iran knows, and we know, this is politically unacceptable for Trump to do this. So Trump has devised these other options. Take the islands, take the uranium, do these things. I think, however, that what he really is looking for is to throw somebody else's army at the problem. What he really wants, and this is a pure guess, this is pure speculation, What he really wants is maybe for the Gulf countries or a coalition of other countries either to do the fighting on the ground or to pick up the baton from us and carry on the fighting at a low level in perpetuity. Maybe that's the plan. It's clear that Washington is looking for an off-ramp, okay? The White House wants out of the fighting, but they also recognize that we need the Strait of Hormuz. We also can't get it. We can't compel Iran to give it up. We probably can't take it back by force. If we tried, many Americans would die. But if we don't do it, then we effectively give it to Iran, and this is a complete humiliation. It's a strategic defeat, and the whole energy market is held hostage by Iran in a formal and institutional and official way. So maybe the off-ramp that Trump is seeking is to delegate the fighting to the junior partners. And he's maybe seeking partners like Saudi Arabia and the Emirates and Israel and maybe even countries in the Pacific or Europe to police the region so that we can recuse ourselves from the fighting because of political reasons, basically. And so that brings me back to what is the purpose of all of this messaging? What is the purpose of the speech? Well, I don't believe that Trump is seriously going to leave the conflict ceding the Strait of Hormuz to Iran. But maybe they want Japan and South Korea and Saudi Arabia and the Emirates and Europe to think that. Because if these countries think that we're willing to do that, this is a big problem for them. And it's a problem for them first. Because after all, it's their oil. The oil that comes from the Persian Gulf. And Trump even said this. If you paid close attention, in the address tonight, Trump said, we don't get oil from the Persian Gulf. And he's right. We are energy independent. We still do import oil based on the type of oil refining infrastructure that we have, like in Texas and in Louisiana. So we tend to want to import heavy sour oil as opposed to light sweet oil, which comes from the oil fields in America. But nevertheless, we're self-sufficient, and the oil that we do import comes from Canada. So Trump said, we don't actually need their oil, and we're going to get none of it, actually. We're okay with having zero oil from the Persian Gulf, from Saudi Arabia. And what's the subtle implication there? The implication is that if Iran is looking to leverage the United States by closing the strait, the only way they're going to affect us is by increasing the price of oil, but they're not going to affect our supply of oil. And what that means is we're always going to have energy. We're going to have electricity and we're going to have fuel and we're going to be okay. It might cost us more money, but we'll have what we need. It's all those other countries that are going to have the very acute energy shortage because it is they that will stop getting their shipments of oil and natural gas. It's India, South Korea, Japan, Malaysia, Taiwan, China. Less so China, they mostly run on coal. But it's these Asian countries that are going to get hit first, and they're going to get hit really hard because they're not easily going to be able to replace all that oil they get from the Persian Gulf. And the same goes for Europe. Europe is totally dependent on liquefied natural gas, and that is going to increase very much because Qatar is shut down because 20% of the LNG comes from that country through the Strait of Hormuz. So why does Trump want the world to believe he's ready to walk away? It is because he wants Iran to think that they don't have as much leverage over us as they might believe. And he also wants our allies to think that we're willing to leave them high and dry. We're going to break it without buying it. We're going to destroy the global energy market. We're going to give Iran the Strait of Hormuz, and all these other countries will be holding the bag. They will have to negotiate to get their oil out. They will have to maybe pay a toll. And the shipping cost for their energy is going to go way up, even if they eventually get it. They're going to have these disruptions. They're going to have to pay more money for their fuel. It's going to hit them harder, and it's going to hit them earlier than it's ever going to touch the United States. So I think that's the playbook. And what that points toward is that we're actually not ready to leave the conflict. We're still deeply committed to those original objectives. Let's talk about some of the other news. The other story from Iran is that U.S. intelligence has confirmed to the U.S. media that Iran is not interested in negotiating at all. This is a story from the Times. It says, quote, multiple U.S. intelligence agencies have assessed in recent days that the Iranian government is not currently willing to engage in substantial negotiations over ending the U.S.-Israeli war. The assessments say the Iranian government believes it is in a strong position in the war and does not have to accede to America's diplomatic demands. While Iran is willing to keep channels open, they said it does not trust the United States and does not think President Trump is serious about negotiations. The assessments align with recent statements from Iranian officials who reject Mr. Trump's assertion that the two sides are making progress in discussions mediated by other countries. A spokesman for Iran's foreign ministry said on Wednesday that the government in Tehran had not asked for a ceasefire, despite a statement from Mr. Trump that morning that it had. The Iranian government could engage diplomatically under the right conditions, say Iranian officials and a Pakistani official. This is the most important part here. Tehran wants to see that Washington is willing to talk seriously about ending the war and not just negotiate a temporary ceasefire, they said. This is maybe the most important thing to understand about the war in Iran right now. And let's back it up. First, let's just say the obvious. All of these ultimatums and deadlines that are being put down are being put down under the pretext that the U.S. and Iran are making progress on a deal. Right? Almost 2 weeks ago, Trump said that if Iran doesn't open up the Strait of Hormuz, we're going to bomb their power grid and their power plants and all their civilian infrastructure. But then he said, we are not enforcing the deadline because Iran wants to make a deal. Then he extended the deadline again. He said Iran begged us to give them another extension, which I have graciously allowed. So the current frame, okay, the current strategy here, going back not a week ago, but almost 2 weeks ago, since the previous Saturday before last, has been that we are holding off on escalating because we are waiting on these negotiations being mediated by Pakistan, Turkey, Egypt, and Saudi Arabia. Well, what has been clear since then and what has been confirmed now is that that is a lie. That is not happening. Trump is misrepresenting this. What is happening is that messages are being passed between Iran and the United States indirectly through intermediaries. Yes, Iran and the United States are passing messages through Pakistan, but these are not negotiations. This is not diplomacy, and it is not progressing. There is no advanced stage negotiations. Trump has variously represented to us that they're going to meet with Iranian officials in a third country. Not happening. Trump has represented to us that Iran wants to make peace. As far as we know, that's not true. Iran wants to keep the war going. Trump has represented to us that there is substantial agreement and progress on a potential deal. That's also not true. Obviously, if there's no direct talks, no meetings, no negotiations, then how could they have come to an agreement? And actually, what is true is the opposite, that the United States is seeking a maximalist suite of demands, and Iran is pursuing their own demands, which are almost the exact opposite of what the United States is looking for. And this tracks with what Iran has been saying. All along the way, Iran and its government officials have been telling the media, we never begged for peace. We don't want a deal. We don't trust the United States. What we want from the U.S. is for them to leave the Middle East and pay reparations and give us the Strait of Hormuz. So this shows and confirms that the U.S. has been lying. Iran is telling the truth. What does this tell us about these deadlines? If Trump is telling us that we're not going to escalate against Iran because diplomacy is making a lot of progress, and that's not true, then what is Trump really doing? Because we are supposed to believe that officially, What we're being told from the government is, if you were to say, what's the plan right now? What are we doing? So what's the game plan here? Trump would tell us, well, we're waiting until April 6th. I threatened to bomb them and they came begging me for a deal. And we're working that out. We're going to give them until April 6th and then we're really going to hit them. Well, if we now know that that's a lie, we're not waiting on a plan because there's no negotiations. We're not waiting on a deal because Iran doesn't trust us. Then what's really happening here? Why are we waiting? Because consider that every single day that passes, it's probably hurting us more than it's hurting Iran. If that weren't the case, Iran might sue for peace and they might reel it in. If this war were really devastating, if these airstrikes were doing something, if they feared death, maybe they would be begging for negotiations. But they're not. They're perfectly comfortable getting hit thousands of times every day. But on the other side, this is catastrophic for the United States because it's causing an energy shock. It's causing prices to go up. And this is threatening to destroy the U.S. economy. Inflation is ticking back up. Mortgage rates are going back up. This may be devastating for the AI industry, which is driving all of our economic growth. This really threatens to send us into a death spiral. We're not talking about $5 gas and that's it. We're talking about like a recession. Maybe a global recession. And this would track with other energy shocks in history. You get an energy shock, you get a recession. So Trump, by pushing this 2 weeks, however much longer it's going to be, he said 2 weeks, 10 days last week. Now he says 2 to 3 weeks tonight. Every day that Trump pushes this out, we are being hurt more. So clearly there's some reason. It's not because there's a peace process going on. Iran is not looking to make a deal. So why are we not withdrawing right now? Why are we prolonging the pain? I think it's very clear that something is being prepared. Something is taking time, but it isn't diplomacy. And as we've talked about all along, while there's talk about advanced stage negotiations and diplomacy, while Trump is making these empty threats that he refuses to enforce, in the meantime, reinforcements are arriving in the Middle East. A third aircraft carrier strike group is being deployed, the USS George Bush. 5,000 Marines, 5,000 paratroopers, 10,000 additional ground forces are all being moved into position in the Middle East. In the meantime, and this is something that hasn't been discussed too much, the Gulf countries are participating more in the fighting. This is something that has been happening gradually and quietly, but Saudi Arabia and the UAE are joining the fight. Whereas in the initial stages of the conflict, Saudi Arabia would not let us use their airspace, would not let us use their bases to launch attacks. Now they are. Now they are letting us use their bases. Now they are letting us use their airspace. Whereas before, they wanted a quick, decisive strike. They were looking for an off-ramp because their real estate and tourism was being devastated. Now each of them want the war to continue and they want us to finish the job and they're more willing to help, even up to and including in ground operations on one of the islands in the Persian Gulf and the Strait of Hormuz. So the speech tonight and these revelations today about how Iran has basically confirmed there's no negotiations, they don't trust us, it points toward Trump is cooking up something, and what that something is an escalation. It is an operation where we will get a decisive victory, and we can escalate to a point. And then once we have some leverage, once we have a sufficient boost in morale, then we can withdraw from the conflict without it being a complete defeat, a complete humiliation. But let's expand a little bit more on what Iran said specifically. Because this is very important. They say that Iran is not willing to negotiate because they're winning. And this is the dynamic of the conflict. This is what the White House will not acknowledge. It's that right now, Iran has all the cards. We actually can't end the fighting. It's the same situation with Russia and Ukraine. We can't end the fighting because we're losing. We're in no position to impose terms because we have no leverage over them. We have to fight this out. We're fighting it out, and they think that they can win, and they are winning. And we have no ability with what we're willing to do, what we're willing to use in our arsenal to change that, to compel them to come to the table or even to accomplish any of our objectives. And what Iran says is we're not even looking to make a deal right now. They say, but we are open to talking under the right conditions. And the conditions, they say, are that we are looking for an actual end to the war, not a temporary ceasefire. Now, what's the difference? Because people might say a ceasefire is an end to the war. Well, what this sounds like to me is like when Vladimir Putin says we need to address root causes. When Putin and Trump are negotiating over Ukraine, Trump says we want a 30-day ceasefire. Putin says we need to address the root causes of the conflict first. That sounds like the same thing here. And so what does Iran mean when they say we don't want a ceasefire, we want an actual durable peace? They're saying, and they're right, that a ceasefire benefits the United States. You're losing right now. You're running out of munitions. Your layered anti-missile system is failing. You are getting hit where it hurts, in the Gulf, in Israel, your radar, your THAAD systems, your bases. Your soldiers are suffering traumatic brain injuries and dying. Iran is saying a 30-day ceasefire, a six-month ceasefire, who does that benefit? It benefits you. We got bombed 13,000 times. You threw everything you had at us. What are you going to do? Bomb us some more? What are you going to do? Kill another general? We have 200,000 of them. Iran is saying at this point in time, a 30-day ceasefire, a temporary ceasefire, that is going to benefit you because that allows you to replenish your stockpile of weapons. That allows you to mobilize more forces in the region. That allows you to recover economically. And in the meantime, Iran is supposed to sit around and wait for the next attack, which almost certainly is going to come because the White House in Israel keeps saying that we still want regime change eventually. Israel says we're not going to get it overnight, but implying eventually we're going to get it. And they know the United States is going to deliver that for them. So Iran is telling us we're winning the war, so we're not going to stop hurting you. We'll talk about peace, but we want a commitment. We actually want some reassurances that this is not going to start up all over again. And what are they going to need for that to happen? They're going to need a peace treaty ratified by Congress. And they're going to need some assurances. They're going to need some assurances that we will be able to control Israel. Maybe the United States can agree. Maybe the Senate will ratify a treaty. But will we commit? Are we able to prevent Israel from provoking Iran, antagonizing Iran, starting this all over again like they appear to have done preceding Midnight Hammer and even this operation, threatening to engage Iran unilaterally? That's what Iran is looking for. And so it goes back to those negotiations from a year ago, from a month ago. Is there going to be a peace deal? Well, you have to analyze what the different sides are looking for. And what Iran says is we're not doing a ceasefire. We're winning, you're losing, you've thrown everything you have at us and we survive. What's another couple of missiles? We're now going to give you 6 months to get ready for another attack? And they know that we are better suited to regroup and get it together than they are. It's going to benefit us more than it will benefit them. We're actually going to enjoy a comparative advantage. If we get a 6 month reprieve, it will be more beneficial than it will be for them. So Iran says, we want a ratified treaty. We want commitments. We want to know you're never going to do this again. And on the other hand, the United States, they want to topple Iran. They want an out so that we can regroup and get together and bomb Iran again. And so that's why what the United States is seeking is we want them to give up their missiles, their proxies, their highly enriched uranium, their nuclear program. Why are we demanding all of these things now? Because we know that if we leave and we don't get them, we're going to have to come back eventually. So that's why we're asking for it right now and saying we have to have it, because if we don't, we have to come back. And I know that Trump doesn't want to do that and the administration doesn't want to do that, because if we come back, it's going to disrupt the oil market all over again, and it's going to be very unpopular in America again. All of this will be revisited. We don't want to keep picking at it. We want to solve it. But what that tells us is that these two positions couldn't be further apart. Trump wants a maximalist menu of demands. He wants a complete and total surrender from Iran. Iran is telling the United States, you're not getting what you want, and you're not even getting a reprieve. We want a commitment that you'll never go to war with us to achieve these objectives ever again. So there's not going to be a peace deal. It's not going to happen anytime soon. It may not happen, period. And this is something you guys need to understand. Don't you get it? This is not going to end. This is going to keep going. What's the off-ramp exactly? What can the United States do at this point? How are we going to take back the strait? How are we going to prevent Iran from launching drones at this 5-mile-wide choke point in the Persian Gulf? We can't. Can't do it. Invade an island? Won't work. Invade Karg Island? Won't work. Iran would probably rather destroy it than have it taken hostage by the United States. How are we going to topple the regime? It won't work. And Iran is telling us we're winning. We're not giving up until we get a durable peace. So there is no end in sight. When they tell us 2 to 3 weeks, that's bullshit. They're telling you that because they know that is a satisfying answer. Are we going to be there yet? Yeah, 10 more minutes. Is this war over yet? Yeah. Two more weeks. It's almost like that's psychologically calibrated to be as minimally offensive as possible. People can wrap their heads around 2 weeks and they can understand it's not going to happen anytime soon, but it is going to happen. And then in 2 weeks, people are going to forget and they'll be ready for another 2-week extension. So what's really going to happen, I believe, is that Trump, like I said, if there's no peace talks happening, if there's no peace in sight, and if the administration wants everybody to believe that peace is about to break out imminently, it is because he's preparing an escalation and he wants as much help as he can get. The other story from this, from the war and from today, is from the Washington Post. And it says that Trump specifically requested a military plan from the Pentagon to invade Iran and seize their stockpile of highly enriched uranium. And this is that story. It says, quote, the U.S. military has given the president a plan to seize nearly 1,000 pounds of highly enriched uranium in Iran that would involve flying in excavation equipment and building a runway for cargo planes to take the radioactive material out. The complex plan was briefed to the president in the past week after he asked for that proposal. In another sign of Trump's interest in pursuing such an operation, he encouraged Americans to tune in to a show by Fox News host Mark Levin on Saturday. During the episode, Levin said the United States should deploy specialized ground troops to take Iran's uranium stockpile. Levin said, quote, why would we need troops on the ground? Well, there's a lot of reasons, and we wouldn't need 300,000 of them. It's this uranium. And I've heard from a friend of a friend of a family of the 82nd Airborne, the paratroopers, that that is the operation. They're going to invade Iran to take out the uranium. And understand what this involves. This is 1,000 pounds of highly enriched uranium buried deep underground. And not only is it buried deep underground, but it's buried underneath rubble. So how do you get 1,000 pounds of uranium hexafluoride canisters, not only out of this underground fortress, but this underground fortress where all the entrances have been caved in by Earth because we bombed them last year? How are you going to do that inside of a country that is hostile, armed to the teeth with drones and missiles? We can't even stop them from bombing the strait. We're going to go into the middle of their country and do this complex engineering operation to retrieve all this stuff and then get it out of there. You can't destroy it. You can't blow it up. It's not a video game. You can't go in there and nuke the nukes. You have to go in. You have to bring in excavation equipment. You have to bring in heavy machinery like construction equipment. You got to clear the tunnels and the entrances. You got to clear all the earth and all the debris. You got to move it out. You need specialists to come in, get all that uranium, and they got to be specialized because it's radioactive material, which might be damaged, might be leaking. You got to load it up into a specialized transport container, and then you have to build a runway close to where you excavated it, fly planes in, load it up on the plane, and fly it out. How long does that take? Well, it doesn't take hours. It doesn't take days. That takes weeks, maybe months. So we're dropping in there with how many people? Thousands of soldiers, thousands of logistics people, tens of thousands. We're flying into the middle of their country in airspace that we don't fully control. We're landing in the middle of the mountains with all our equipment, with our tens of thousands of people, building a runway. And by the way, this is a country that has 3,000 ballistic missiles and probably an infinite amount of drones that will be launching at us the entire time that we're doing it. So we'll be there for weeks as we're getting hit with drones and missiles, getting the highly enriched uranium out. This is one of the things that is being discussed. And it's probably what you need to do to end the conflict. What are the main things we need to achieve? Well, it's less so the regional proxies. They can be dealt with. And it's less so the missiles, although that is arguably a priority too. The big ones are opening up the strait and getting the uranium out. Well, if Iran is not compliant, then we have to take the uranium by force. We have to do it this way, and better do it now than later, so the thinking goes. And how do you get the Strait of Hormuz opened? Once again, if you can't get them to cooperate, you need leverage. So we might get both. We might get both an operation to take the uranium and an invasion of the islands. And I think this is why Trump is trying to compel our allies to help us. This is going to be very complex, very logistically difficult. People are going to die. And I think that Trump wants cooperation from the Saudis and the Emiratis to take the islands. And maybe that's step one. Maybe that's a beachhead. Maybe that's advancing towards the mainland. He wants cooperation and support from the other countries too, maybe for the same operation. And then the ultimate goal is once you have the islands, maybe they want to fly into Iran and get all that material out. And then we can say mission accomplished, because only then can we really let Iran collapse. We need control of the energy market, and we can't realistically collapse Iran while they have that uranium buried underground, because the question becomes, if Iran becomes a failed state and destabilizes, or if some other kind of regime takes power, what happens when they make a move to get the uranium? Trump says, well, we're going to be watching closely, making sure they don't make a move for it. Well, how can you compel them not to take it? How can you compel them not to do that? So all of this points towards an escalation where Trump wants to lock arms with every other country. He wants to offload the cost of all the fighting to as many other countries as possible. He wants it to be diffuse. So that when we go on the island, it's not just going to be the U.S. and Israel going alone, or really the U.S. going alone. He wants the Emiratis to help us launch the attack. He wants cover from the Saudi and Emirati Air Force. Maybe he wants Emirati Special Forces, which have been somewhat effective in Yemen and elsewhere. I think that is the play here. And what are the prospects for success? I mean, on some level, you're rooting for America because you don't want the soldiers to die. But I think a lot of them are going to die. And I don't think the odds of success are high here in either of these operations. If we take Karg Island, if we take an island in the Strait of Hormuz, if we try to take this highly enriched uranium, none of this is going to happen without a hitch. This is not like kidnapping Maduro, nothing close to it. This is not like bombing the Houthis in Yemen, which is basically no risk, no cost to us, relatively speaking. This would be arguably the most complex special forces operation in history by far. The biggest in terms of personnel, the most sophisticated, the most complex, and that means the most risky, and you're going to have casualties. So what happens when we engage Iran in this way and thousands of Americans start to die? Does this make it easier for us to leave? And what does Iran do after we steal their uranium and take their islands? Are they just done? people don't understand. This is bad. And it's going to keep going on and on and on. Unless we are able to cut our losses and put Israel in their place, that's it. We could share the Strait of Hormuz with Iran. We could get them to give up their nuclear program. We had a nuclear deal with them for 10 years, or we should have had it for 10 years. What is standing in between the U.S. and Iran making a deal is that Israel, because of their foreign policy, has to undermine it. It's that simple. We're either going to destroy our country, crash the global economy, we're going to bleed out in this bear trap that we can't get out of, or we can restrain Israel and tell the Jews no. That's your options. And we're literally going to kill our country because we can't tell these fucking people no. That's Mark Levin. And Mark Levin, this guy is scary. This guy is a scary nut job. You want to, and by the way, you know what's really interesting about all this? What is the rhetoric about Iran? What are we told about why we're at war with Iran and what is the problem with Iran? Well, the narrative goes something like Iran is led by hateful religious zealots. They want a nuclear weapon and they're going to use it against Israel and the United States because of their apocalyptic vision of bringing about the end times and their pure hatred for these other groups. So what exactly does that make Mark Levin and Netanyahu and Ben-Gvir and all these ministers in the Israeli government, what does that make them? Are they not religious zealots possessed by an apocalyptic vision of the eschaton? Are they not hateful? Are they not seething, foaming at the mouth, bloodthirsty with hatred and anger, looking to destroy and kill Iranians? Are they not nuclear armed? Have they not threatened to nuke their enemies in the past? It's exactly the same thing. Look at Mark Levin. He is the chief propagandist for the war. Somehow he's on Fox News. He's on Twitter promoting it every day. Trump is promoting him all the time. Out of all the commentators, out of all of them, Brian Kilmeade and Jesse Waters on Fox, or Tucker Carlson, and others on the internet. Out of all the commentators that are out there, it's Mark Levin that Trump is promoting. Watch his show. Everyone that's against him isn't really MAGA. He's the real guy. Everyone that doesn't like him is stupid. Mark Levin wraps his arm around Trump's neck. The United States president and Donald Trump. Donald Trump, who famously grabs Macron's hand and tries to literally throw him on the floor on his ass. Mark Levin puts his arm around his neck and says, yeah, we love this guy. And then Trump goes on True Social and says, anyone that's against Mark Levin is against MAGA. He's a genius. He only puts America first. He's the chosen one. Watch his show and look at Mark Levin, who's at war with Megyn Kelly, Piers Morgan, Tucker Carlson, me, Candace, all these people seething with hatred about the Iranians. Who was there last year? A week before Midnight Hammer, it was Ike Perlmutter, look him up, Jewish billionaire, and Mark Levin that had lunch with Trump at the White House before the first strikes against Iran. So what is this? What is this? What is going on here? Because that looks to me like an alien invasion. That looks like Trump is literally owned by Mark Levin, like a bitch. Owned by Mark Levin, who is some sort of conduit for Israeli influence. Who knows exactly what his role is? But he has clearly been appointed as some kind of liaison, some kind of ambassador. But he is obviously a spoke that leads to Israel, which is the nucleus of all of this. It was him who was at the Republican Jewish Coalition in November and practically declared war on Tucker and Vance and me. And now it's Mark Levin that's at the front promoting this war. And is Mark Levin being ceaselessly promoted by Trump and apparently telling us about this operation to take the uranium in Iran? This is going to absolutely ruin the United States. It's hard to see how we ever get out of this one. How do we extricate ourselves from this? It's not happening in 2 to 3 weeks. I don't know that it'll happen in a few months. We may still be here in a year. Who knows? But this is a very bad situation. And people like me have been saying this for years. And I want you to remember, don't just remember the people that were in favor of this. Remember the people that were indifferent to all of this. You understand the difference? Ben Shapiro, Mark Levin, they've been in favor of a war with Iran. And most people were against. But for the past 2.5 years, as we have marched step by step, one foot over the other, towards this war, it's not them that were the problem. It wasn't those guys. It was all these other people that were ostensibly against the war, but told us to look the other way. Told us to be indifferent to it. Told us that was a distraction. Told us that wasn't a real issue. It was a throwaway comment because this has been going on for a long time. In 2024, Netanyahu told Trump, Iran is trying to assassinate you. Why do you think he told them that? It's very transparent. Why do you think he said that? It's because he wanted to poison the well. He wanted to sabotage that relationship so that Trump was primed to bomb Iran when he got in. This has been going on for a long time. And the pro-Israel crowd, they're not exactly wrong when they say that Trump has always been saying Iran can never be a nuclear power and we're going to stop them. They're not wrong. It's just that people in the middle always downplayed that. I didn't. I said during the election, Trump will take us to war in Iran. He is the Iran war candidate. Listen when he tells you. When he shows you what he's going to do, listen and pay attention and take it seriously. It was these other people. It was the cadre of GOP pro-Trump influencers who said, that's not a big deal. That's a throwaway comment. He didn't mean that. Isn't it funny how in 2024, when Trump talked about bombing Iran, we said, hey, we don't support that. And Trump supporters said he didn't mean it. There's not going to be a war in Iran. Well, now we're in a war with Iran. And now the Trump supporters say, well, he always said we were going to go to war with Iran. Wait a second. 2 years ago, you told me that was a throwaway comment and he didn't mean it. What he really means is no new wars. 2 years ago, you told us he just has to pander to the Israel lobby. He's only saying that. His real position is no new wars. But it was the opposite. His real position was bombing Iran for the donors. The trick was telling you no new wars to get the votes. And people like me tried to tell you. People like Matt Walsh said we were obsessed with Palestine. Remember? People like Matt Walsh and all the others said, I'm America first, which means I'm not paying attention to what's happening in the Middle East. Well, you know who's paying attention to the Middle East? The Jewish billionaires that made Trump president. So if it matters to them, it should matter to us because that's their guy in the White House. But people wanted us to believe that people on Twitter were going to have more influence over foreign policy than the billionaires that gave Trump $200 million in the election. Which is insane when you say it like that, but that is what they actually believed. So make no mistake about it. This is a catastrophe. This is a disaster. We are losing by definition. We had 5 objectives. We got 1 of them. The remaining 4 are impossible. And actually now we have another problem, which is they've taken the Strait of Hormuz and we can't get it back. And the only way to exit the conflict without being completely humiliated and defeated is for us to put boots on the ground. The thing everybody swore was never going to happen. Everybody said that was the red line. Remember, first it was don't bomb Iran. Then it was don't bomb Iran offensively. Then it was, okay, bomb Iran offensively, but not for regime change. Then we started the regime change war. We bombed them 13,000 times. And now they say, well, just no boots on the ground. Now that there's boots on the ground, imminent, now they're saying, well, but they're not going to stay for a long time. And there's not going to be 300,000 of them. Are you kidding? That's where we are now? Well, we're in a regime change war with Iran, bombing them thousands of times a day, and we're about to invade, but it's not going to be 300,000 soldiers, and they're not going to stay for years. Oh, what a relief. That's great. So glad. And these are the people, again, for years, they told you to look the other way. They are the problem. Because they are the traitors. They're the people that actually have credibility and they abused it. They told you, I'm America first. I just don't care that much about Israel. Look over here. There are idiots out there that think they know better than me. They say Nick is just too preoccupied with Israel. He needs to move on. I'm the only one that's been fucking correct. So maybe I'm preoccupied enough about Israel. Maybe there's a deficit for all these people that were surprised to see how this has played out. I'm too fixated. Maybe you're not fixated enough. I hold Matt Walsh accountable. You know who the real problem is? It's guys like Matt Walsh. It's not even really Trump, although obviously he's a huge part of it. It's not even Ben Shapiro or Mark Levin. It's people like Matt Walsh that got us to this point. And you want to know why? Because for the past 2.5 years, there has been a very vocal and loud and growing movement of people that are trying to wake up that Jews control this country and they are destroying this country so they can build their superpower in the Middle East. People are hip. People are becoming aware. We had an opportunity to fight back, but our own side on the right wing was telling us, you're crazy. That's not happening. You're just obsessed with Palestine. You're a third worldist. You're spiritually leftist. These were the things that were being told to us. This is not a surprise. I said it 2.5 years ago, this is where things were headed. And you might say, why didn't people listen? How could people have missed it? It was so obvious in retrospect. It was inexorable that we would wind up here. How could we have been so blind? I'll tell you how. Because all the people that were trying to sound the alarm in 2024 and 2025, they were being confronted and called third worldists, spiritual leftists. You're not serious about politics. You actually just want to lose because psychologically you hate winning. And all this nonsense. And people bought it because they wanted to believe. And they thought the real America First position was to look the other way. We have to focus on the school board meetings. School board meetings. Why? Because your kid is going to learn that transgender people exist? I don't know. They're on TikTok, bro. I think they know that. Honestly, homeschool them if it's that big of a problem. We are a global empire. It's kill or be killed. We're going to die here. What do you think happens when people stop buying the dollar? What do you think happens when demand for the dollar decreases? It means we can't borrow anymore. What do you think happens when we can't borrow money anymore? All these trade surpluses we're running, all this debt that we've racked up. How do we pay for our entitlement welfare state? How do we pay for our military? How do we pay for anything? What does this country even make? What does this country even make? Do we make furniture? Do we make children's toys? Do we make cars? Do we make machines? Do we make parts? We make nothing. So what do you think happens when they call the collect? What do you think happens when nobody's buying our dollar anymore? What do you think happens when we fail in this war? Inflation spirals out of control. Everybody goes bankrupt. Nobody's paying their credit cards. Nobody's paying their car payment, their mortgage. What do you think happens when all these AI companies explode and they stop building more and buying more commercial real estate? What happens? What happens when all these people are unemployable because of AI? The job market's frozen. People are now becoming unemployed. We have 50 million illegals. Where do you think all this is going? And people say, don't pay attention to that. Just focus on these provincial, parochial type things. We ought to focus on the real issues. Snow White is black. Ariel is black. My daughter lost her soccer game to a tranny. Okay, whatever. And to this day, they won't acknowledge it. To this day, they won't acknowledge it. That's the problem. It's these people. They're still hanging on. I saw this dumbass the other day. I might be wrong. And if I'm wrong, I'll admit it. And this is just a hunch. Don't shoot the messenger. I'm still pro-Trump, but I think he messed up here. It's like, wow, still can't let it go, huh? Still can't. What's it going to take? People are literally going to have to wait to see the flash. And then feel the shockwave and the heat wave before they're like, we were wrong. We were wrong. We should have never trusted the plan. They're going to see a bright flash, go blind. Then they'll feel the shockwave, all the glass breaks, face melting. We were wrong. I guess I was wrong. We should have never trusted the plan. We should have voted for yay. We should have voted for Kanye. We prefer the GIMP mask. Being a cuck isn't that bad, actually, compared to this. Now we're dead. Now we're melting. It's what it is. I tried to warn you, and the reason that the warning did not get there is because it was suppressed. And it was suppressed by people like Charlie Kirk, Matt, yes, Charlie Kirk, Matt Walsh. You know the worst thing about Charlie Kirk? He knew that war with Iran was coming. He tried to justify it anyway. That's the worst part. He got this guy elected. I didn't. It was guys like Kirk. It was guys like Matt Walsh. All these people that stood by and did nothing, or they tried to downplay it. The biggest patriot was Tucker. Well, the biggest patriot was me because I said not to vote for Trump. But a big patriot was Tucker because Tucker has been talking about this for a couple years now, about the war in Iran, when other people were not. But he did speak at the RNC, so I kind of hold him accountable. Anyway, so that's that. It's very, listen, get your affairs in order, figure it out, because this is going to get ugly. Going to get ugly. Get your guns, get your potable water, get your filter straw, get your shit together. Visit your loved ones before jet fuel gets expensive. Okay, visit your manic pixie dream girl. Drop into New York and visit your manic pixie dream girl or whatever. Pop in. Do what must be done because we're all going to die very soon. No, we're not actually all going to die, but things are going to get very real. You think it's a big joke? You think it's all a little Groiper war? It's all fun and games? No, this is going to get, it can get very bad. All right, we're going to move on. We're going to get into our super chats. We'll see what you guys have to say. Yeah. Guess the third world is know what they're talking about. I guess the spiritual leftists, dude, if you're one of these people that was saying spiritual leftist, you should honestly kill yourself. All these cocksuckers, the faux profundity, everything is spiritual for them. These like degenerate, hedonistic drug users and whores, always talking about spirituality. You're not a spiritual person. You're a base, carnal, simple person. You're a fucktard. And you see all these fucktards on Twitter saying, that's like very spiritually whatever, spiritually this. You know, that word spiritually is doing a lot of heavy lifting for somebody that really doesn't have a vocabulary or anything to say. That's just like so, if you're not like voting for Trump, that's like spiritually leftist. Spiritually leftist. You're on like Tinder trying to get laid and you're a fucking dork. Spiritually leftist. I'll kill you. You heard that all throughout last year. Oh, you're a third world. You're this. I'm as reactionary as it gets. I don't know what you're talking about. Third world is spirit. You work for Jews. You ever hear of the ordeal of civility? There doesn't get more third world than the shtetl, third worldist. You know who's a third worlder? Stephen Miller. Stephen Miller is a third worlder. Jews are third world. Jews cannot make technology. You know who made everything? Whites. Whites. You know who made everything? Whites. And people say, you're not white. Okay, whatever. It's still true. It's still true. People say that like I'm taking credit. I'm saying a fact. You know who built everything? Planes, railroads, cars, the radio, the telephone, the telegraph, whites, television, everything, whites. Jews are money changers, bullshit artists, psychopaths, charlatans, grifters, manipulators. Okay, self-promoters. They're like gypsies. They're like a traveling circus. Selling snake oil. Not to mix metaphors, but that's what they are. And people say, you're a third worldist. You think Stephen Miller is one of us. Stephen Miller is from the shtetl. His parents are from the ghetto. His grandparents were kicked out by the Tsar, you know, by a real European civilization. They were in the ghetto doing the Fiddler on the Roof. You're talking about third world. Why do you think they're so obnoxious? Why do you think they're so fucking obnoxious? They have no manners because they come from the third world. They come from the literal ghetto. Where do you think the word ghetto comes from? So, and they said we were spiritually leftist. Stop. Just stop with that. They have been mind raped by Jews. It's unbelievable. Anyway, I said I wouldn't get all political. I promised I wasn't going to get all political. All right, we're going to move on.